Welcome to Hope Talks, where we share inspiring stories of hope in Jesus Christ. Hope Talks is hosted by Pastor Margaret Michael and Grayson Willis. Join us for uplifting stories of triumph, faith, and the enduring power of Christ's love. Also, if you're in the listening area, tune in to 1470 AM or 102.1 FM WBTX to listen to Hope Talks every Sunday at noon.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Grayson Willis.
I'm Margaret Michael.
Thanks for tuning in. Pastor Margaret is joining us via the phone today, but we also have another guest, Pastor Aaron Golden, joining us via the phone. So I'm in the Hope Talk studio, and Pastor Margaret and Aaron are both on the phone. Margaret is here locally, and Aaron is joining us from Newbern, North Carolina. Aaron, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Doing good from the polar vortex of Eastern North Carolina.
Yeah,
you've gotten some snow down there recently.
We did. We had 18 inches about, let's see, through Saturday night and the Sunday morning. So that's about a 35-year high for us.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
So we did. Usually doesn't hang around long because being here on the coast, of course, by the Gulf Stream, you know, usually the temperatures get up there pretty quick and we get that stuff melted off. But with that polar air you guys have been experiencing, I guess that has lingered for a while and kept that snowpack nice and tight. So
yeah,
we're just now falling out.
Yeah, we look like the frozen tundra in Mount Crawford.
Yeah, 6 to 7 inches, but when it's ice, it does stick around for a while.
Yeah, that's a whole different deal there.
Yeah, it has been an interesting experience.
But, well, Aaron, we're familiar with you, and we've had you on here before, but it's been a while, so just kind of, we're here to get an update, but we probably need a little backstory just to get us caught up on your story and how that began. So if you just want to tell us a little bit about whatever you want to share about growing up or when the Lord first spoke to you and how that impacted your family.
Yeah, for sure, Grayson. And thank you guys for having me on. And for those listening, it's a joy to be with you all. And I have been familiar with Harrisonburg and Church of Nazarene there with you guys for many years. And most of that, Grayson, is because of our family's intertwining nature, being from the same location in Eastern North Carolina, down around Parker's Island. Your parents, Carrie and Kim, right there growing up with my parents, Ned and Gail. And so it's been a pretty interesting journey. For many of you, you probably heard my story secondary from Pastor Carrie sharing over the years with my dad coming to the Lord when I was about 5 years old. And a lot of that was centered around my mom getting us back in the church. And when I came along, and my dad, he had a lot of baggage with legalism and religious tradition that was so proliferant in our community. And that was sort of a something that was a put off for him as far as being a Christian. And when I came along, my mom decided that she was going to raise her kid in the church and around Jesus, and regardless of whether my dad would come or not. So the early parts of my life was attending the Nazarene church that was a new start, meeting up in a Catholic church in Atlantic Beach. It was about 35 minutes drive, and she found that church because of your dad, Grayson, and your mom. You guys were there in the middle of that new start, and she had heard about it from them, and so that's how we got there. And lo and behold, my dad, for several years before he officially made a proclamation of faith, would come sit in your dad's Sunday school class, but he wouldn't stick around for church. And that was just a relational impact over the years. But I think the thing that really got him over the years was my mom really made an effort for she and I to pray every night together. And one particular night, my mom and I were praying at the bedside. My dad walked by, and he specifically heard me praying for my dad to be saved. And that I probably would say that was one of those moments that have sort of changed, maybe not necessarily my theological positioning, but my posturing around salvation. I think my dad came face to face with an awareness of a God that had been pursuing him. We call it prevenient grace, but I think he came face to face with a love that had been enveloping his life, and he was just not aware of it that night. And so he went to bed. My mom went and saw he was disturbed. you know, he was just unsettled, and they began a discussion. And essentially it came down to, he told her, he said, I've got a son that can pray for me, but I feel like I can't pray for him. And that began a whole different trajectory for his life and mine and our families. And so he gave his heart to the Lord that night, and nothing was the same after that. So from that point on, you know, I was born and raised in the church. We were right in the midst of three different Church of the Nazarene churches, New Starts. And through all that, you know, the Lord got a hold of my life in a big way. And through the influence of people like your dad, Grayson, Carrie, and Kim, and through your uncles, through your Uncle Bill, and Lori, his wife, being so good friends, and watching him go off and pursue ministry. And, you know, just, I think in a lot of things, we try to at times make it more complicated than it likely needs to be. I think they were doing what they felt like was a full surrender for their life to follow Jesus. And when you see people do that, you can't help but take note, you know, there's something different there. When people leave home, family, tradition, and businesses at times, you know, successful people, leaving the net, so to speak, to go where they felt the Lord had called them. That's something that has an impact. That's a legacy that really, at times, we don't really consider that when we make those decisions. So growing up around that, growing up in church, I grew up in a family business. That was my legacy. That was my family's legacy in Carter County. And for me, that was all I was set out to do. And I would probably say around about 10 years old, you know, my testimony really, and you guys can interject here at any time. So, I mean, I'm a preacher. A preacher can talk.
You're doing great.
Doing great.
So, about 10 years old, I think, I tell folks, you know, I have what I would consider, you know, if you had to put a label on it, I went down the old salted path, the wood dusted path, to officially, quote unquote, give my heart to the Lord when I was 16 on New Year's night. But I can honestly say that I don't know that I ever really had a moment in my life that I didn't have an awareness that God was with me. And when I was 10 years old, I remember being at a revival service that we had, and there was a, I want to say Dabadeen was, did you guys have Dabadeen up around Harrisonburg at one time? He was a Jamaican missionary. I can't remember if your dad ever had him around, but he was speaking at a church we were part of. And I don't remember, I couldn't tell you too. I mean, this will take some pressure off anybody that is a pastor or maybe somebody in ministry. We put a lot of weight on our own shoulders. Here's the truth. I don't remember a thing Dabadeen said or anything else that was being spoken, but I just remember having an overwhelming feeling that whatever he was doing was what I was supposed to do. And, but you're 10 years old, you know, what do you do with that? So I, out of that, you know, my mom and I would have conversations through the years, and there was, you know, spiritual conversations, things would come up, and they identified that there was something they felt maybe my life was supposed to be lived for. That wasn't just a family business, but, you know, again, tradition and family legacy, that's a big story. You know, your life lives according to story. And, so that was what my life was storied by. But, you know, when I was 16, I had that encounter with Jesus, and that was one of those places where I think he really started to connect a lot of dots. I had another experience probably when I was in my early 20s that I just felt the Lord had really called me to be set apart for something different. And I didn't know what to do with all those things. I had them in the framework of what I knew, which was what I had been given by the church. So long story short, met my wife, Lene, and she was from Alabama. She was a PK, bless her heart. So through our marriage and our relationship and pursuing things in life, we wound up running a family business, doing all the things that I thought I was set out to do. And by my mid-20s, I was about as miserable as you could get. I was a great church member, served about in every capacity you could ask me to, just trying to basically appease the Lord. And I realized that in all those things, I was just never satisfied. Now, looking back, I don't know that many times we take a moment to really do that when we're giving testimony, because we like to package it well.
Yeah.
But looking back, the Lord used that moment in my life that was a crisis, I think, to ultimately help get my mind and my life directed towards Him. But I'll be honest with you, it didn't really fix everything. Because there was a lot of things that I had realized that I, now looking back, that I had based my life on as my worth. And a lot of that was to make my family happy and proud. to carry on a legacy of a family business and just generally want to be successful. And the hard part about that for me was I felt like, well, I'm not doing what the Lord's called me to do, so I got to stop being in business and I got to go into ministry. Mm. And that wasn't necessarily wrong. But I'll tell you what it did. I wound up, I thought I was going to do the Tennessee against Rebecca. And praise the Lord, he didn't make me do that because I don't know how we would have ate. But regardless, we were serving at a church in Beaufort, Bridgeway Church in the Nazarene, where the affectionate Porter Graves and his family have been for, 20-some years, I think, now, which is crazy.
Yeah.
He was crazy enough that they asked us if we'd hang around and be an associate. And Lene was leading worship. And they would give us a little stipend, and we could cut our teeth in that capacity, and I could pursue further education and things that I needed. So we agreed to do that, and I'm ever grateful for that. But we pivoted right into that space, and I mean, I ran probably as hard in the ministry as I did in the business world, and I took a lot of those things with me. I wanted to make the Father happy. I wanted to live a life that was worthy of the legacy of the kingdom, and I was going to work really hard and sacrifice a lot. Even things I shouldn't to make that happen. And you know, that played out. We served there a couple of years, and then it was obvious, you know, we got something else we got to do. Didn't know what that looked like, and the Lord wound up crossing our paths with Dan LaRoy, which maybe you guys have heard Pastor Kerry Plenty talk about. But I ran into him one day in Harkers Island at Seaside Galley and having lunch, and he threw out a mention about something going on and would love to talk to me about it. And he mentioned New Bern, North Carolina, which a few months before Lene and I had been visiting and had this overwhelming feeling we could live there. But again, another one of those things like, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
And so that conversation led us down a path that a year later, from 2013 in September to November of 2014, we had uprooted our whole family and our lives to move to New Bern, which is only about an hour west of where we were living. But still, if you're going to move an hour away, you might as well be 10 hours away, you know? So he planted us here, and that the purpose was to plant a church. And being an entrepreneur at heart, growing up in a lot of new starts in the Nazarene church, one of them being started in my dad and mom's own shop. I didn't really think about it at the time, but the Lord had helped prepare us for that. And Lene had been around a lot of that with her own family. And so from 2014 to now, we've been, I mean, we're going on 12 years of being here in this community, and that church really grew. I mean, from five of us being me, Lene, and our kids, and another five, my mom, dad, and a few other people that would drive up on a Sunday night when we started in our house, grew from that to we've launched another, you know, the churches out of it. We helped other churches plant it. Church is around 500-600 people. You know, it's been quite a journey, but I ran right into that to say all that. My testimony, you know, you could celebrate those points, but along the way, the things that the Lord has really revealed has been more personal, that has had more impact than just measurable size. And I'd probably say about 2018 and 19 was another crisis moment in my life where I ran into the reality of the same thing that I thought I had pivoted from all those years before when I thought I was just running from the call of the Lord. And the truth of that was that I had still lived my whole life identified by the wrong things. And I was trying to find my worth in my production and not in his presence.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2018 and 19 were a big pivot for us. You know, the church was growing, but I was just crushed. I mean, my soul was crushed. My marriage was crushed. There was so much brokenness that I just had hidden behind a religious ruse. And I didn't even know it, you know?
Yeah.
Could preach a great sermon. People were drawn. I think I was as real as I could be. But
yeah,
I also was just blind. So the Lord really did started doing a slow roll on us. And what was interesting in that was the church still grew in the middle of all that. And I think probably one of the coolest things that I would say about my entire testimony is that we moved to plant a church in New Bern, North Carolina, because we thought there was a people here that God was pursuing. He was going to use us to help draw to his kingdom, which is true. But what I found was we didn't come for the benefit of other people as much as it was we were seeing something built that we ourselves were going to benefit from. And so I think one of the greatest revelations I've ever had over the last, especially 7 years, was I found a community that we had helped birth with us partnering with the Lord's work. And even in all of our mistakes and all the places that I got it wrong, we found a family of people that were broken, but were defined by the things we had hoped that they would be, which was compassion, love, grace. And so over those years, from 19 till probably about 23, when a lot of things were being churned up in us, they were always faithful to walk right there with us in our worst, in our in the midst of our greatest struggles, in the midst of the times where it was like, I don't know if our marriages are going to make it. And they were right there with us. And so, man, through all that, the Lord has, he's been faithful. And that was a lot. I know, guys, so I'm sorry. But
Thank you for your vulnerability.
Yeah, when I look back over that story, you know, we always get focused on how much it is either God doing something to us or us doing something for him. It is a both and, but I think he's more concerned about the healing of our own soul than it is as much as about what we will do to ever have any produce in his kingdom. And so, man, it's been a incredible journey. So along the way, I've been there. I've got to meet you guys and Margaret. For whatever reason, you and I just hit it off all those years ago, like a brother and sister.
That's right.
And Grayson, we've always been there in our in each other's lives. So it's just been a joy, man. But that's my story in a nutshell, in a big old nutshell. But
yeah, that's a big nutshell. Yeah. But that's all right. That is. There's a few things in there that I didn't realize that your mom was going to a Nazarene church when you were little. I don't know why I missed that part of your story. That's really cool. And just to see, you know, the tapestry of relationships, and we can go through life and think, well, this is, you know, these are my people, and this is what I need. And then you took a step of faith and moved it our way. And Ephesians 3 says that God has things planned for us we've never thought or imagined. And I just was thinking about that scripture as you were sharing about how Newbern had a family that you needed. Not to discount your family of origin, but a family to do life with. And I think so often when we think about the call, we think about the cost, and there is a cost. But there is, we have a God that loves us and wants more for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that step of faith is not always easy, but God is so good at that. He would, before you all got that call, you know, to think about Newbern, you had already been there and he had already planted that in your own heart. And that's just the faithfulness of God.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean when we're called that everything's just going to be easy. And on the contrary, right? Like he's told us that we will have struggles, and he's working at transforming us, right, into becoming more like Christ as we walk this journey. And so we're going to hit the bump, but we're not going to be alone in it.
Yeah, that's, I think, well, sometimes when we get caught up, and especially for me, when we, you know, had this all transpire, which, you know, I always joke, I was a licensed Nazarene pastor, but I was ordained in the Wesleyan Church. But so our pivot was within a sister movement, but still.
Right.
I denominational stuff hasn't much always been the full directive of my life. It's not like that's my greatest allegiance. But, you know, when I think about with Newbern, we thought in planting that, we thought, man, the Lord has people in mind in Newbern, and he did. But he also had us on his mind.
Yeah, right.
That's sometimes, I think our inherent, like, disposition is, especially when we talk about, like, the call or stuff like that, and I don't want to get into splitting hairs on that, but sometimes we just make it, like I said, we overcomplicate it so much where it seems as something that's unattainable or only a select few are made for. And the truth is, even in the midst of, you know, walking in a church community, whether you're in some specific form of leadership or not, the Lord is looking for people that have vulnerable hearts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the journey is not us to do something to someone. It should be reciprocal.
Yeah.
The community itself should be reciprocal. It's not like I'm set apart to tinker on an old car as a mechanic. We're all in this same thing together. And sometimes it's easy because of the systems and the things and the formalities. And they're not all inherently been set in place in an evil manner. It's just the familiarity brings contempt. And we start to placate to those things rather than live in a vulnerable space, realizing that, man, even if I'm in the middle of a leadership or if I'm called to function and operate in the church a certain way, that does that probably means I'm going to be the leader of someone that's willing to be vulnerable, the leader of somebody that's willing to acknowledge that I'm struggling in some place. And that's scary when we have environments that are set up to be as though you have the clergy and laity, you have the hired hand and those that aren't, you've got those who've got to have it together and those that don't. but I think that's the only way that you benefit in a reciprocal way is leading with that vulnerability. So we say, I think authenticity, we talk about authenticity a lot in our community, but I think it's an overused word, but it's still a good word. And but I think that's what people really, I mean, that's the only place work is in the middle of that authenticity.
That's right. He can only work in the present, right? And in authenticity and vulnerability. And I just have always felt like I want to be transparent, and sometimes it makes people uncomfortable. Because they put a leader in a place, well, you shouldn't think that you're the past. You know, like, and I'm like, I'm a human being, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And it is so important to be in a community where if we can't, we need to be in a place that, you know, we need to have relationships where we're most vulnerable. But if we would have any idea the what people walk in our doors carrying, being that no one else there would even understand their pain when leadership is carrying things in the door too.
Yep.
And I've talked about this on podcast before, and I have permission to share this, but I my life group, there were some things happening in the lives of folks in our life group, and they just were not at this place where they're willing to be vulnerable. And they were building that trust.
Yeah.
And one night I just looked at one of the folks in the circle and said, are you ready? Are you ready to share what you've been going through? And thank goodness she was. That would have been an uncomfortable moment. And there were probably 4 to 5 other people in that circle that were dealing with the very same thing, carrying it in there every week.
Yep.
And not willing to say. And I cannot tell you what happened in that circle when there was vulnerability. And it was beautiful. The relationships that are so deep, they go to each other sometimes, don't tell me, because there's this deep sense of vulnerability. And I have that in my life. Like, I have to have that. We all do. Those places that we can share and not pretend or feel like we can't ever share. That's the enemy. If the enemy can keep us feeling like it's just between he and I, but when we speak that truth, 1 Peter 2, I believe, talks about the devil and his angels are chained to darkness. And when we speak that into the light of other believers, the enemy loses the foothold.
Yep.
And he knows he will. That's why he tries to keep us silent. So I'm just really grateful that you and Lynae were willing and able to be vulnerable in your community. I know it wasn't easy, but I can't imagine what would have happened if you hadn't been.
We wouldn't be in a good place, that's for sure.
And a couple things that stuck out to me, Pastor Aaron, as you were sharing, was number one, you were sharing vulnerably about 2018 and 19 when outwardly maybe things were going well with the church and everything, but maybe you were dealing with some burnout or whatever. And it's just the importance that we need to fill our cups. We can't give from an empty cup. And so we need to, you pinpointed that our relationship with the Lord, our quiet time with Him, we need to make sure that we're doing those type of things, whatever, to fill our cups. And another thing that you shared about your dad, when he started coming to that Sunday school class that my dad taught, even though he didn't come to the actual services, well, relationships matter. and they grew up together. They graduated high school together. So it talks to the importance of maybe there's somebody we think, oh, well, they would never go to church. They'd never be interested. But if you have a relationship with that person, they might give it a try just because of the relationship that you've built with them. And maybe even that starts outside of church. Just, I think of the idea, Daryl Cripe talks about the one, and our pastor, Pastor Kevin, when he first came here, he was talking about the importance of one, you know, rearranging your life for the one in your life that doesn't know him.
Yeah. So in everything you guys are saying, I think first, I think about, you know, some of the depths of maybe my life over the last years has been, I've got a different perspective than maybe I had 10 years ago. Life tends to do that. And I'm in my 40s now. Pastor Margaret doesn't know about that. She's still 29. But
right. We have not seen each other for a while.
It's just the lessons of life shift and change your perspective. But, you know, even just there's a difference between, I think, within church at times. I want to try to frame this well and with everything you guys have talked about, as I think it hits a multitude of areas. You know, I love the Bible, but we don't need just more Bible-centeredness. We need more biblical worldview. We need people that are storied in the story that God's communicating. There's a transmission that sometimes we lose in the minutiae of talking about the individual precepts of the scripture. I think that's common. I think that was a problem with the Pharisees in Jesus's day and the Sadducees. Is sometimes we lose the vastness of the story that our lives are called to. That's just like I was saying within my own life, growing up in generational business in a small town community where it was like Cheers at the time. Everybody knows your name. I've watched many lives live a story. They're living for something bigger than themselves. The difficult part about that is many people are unaware of that and how their lives are caught up in that story. And so it just is deduced down to, I want to live close to my family or up. I love the Cape Lookout Lighthouse, so I'm going to live close. So I'm going out in the boat every weekend. But the truth is your life is living that story. And I think that's the thing about a biblical worldview is a biblical worldview demands that allegiance to a God, yes, to Jesus, yes, but it also is an allegiance to his story for our lives. And that makes you think about your life differently. It's not just a precept to stop sinning. It's not management. It becomes participation again, as in, if it's Dallas Willard or anybody that's written, I mean, you could say apprentice, or we would say disciple. Yes, true, but I would say as a co-laborer, partner in the kingdom of heaven. I mean, that's Adam's whole role, was to be a partner in God's kingdom effort, his Edenic reign. And we're still, that's the point of Jesus, is he's made us, again, co-heirs with him. I mean, that language, he's secured again for us this position that seemed to have been lost with Adam. But I think of what vulnerability and authenticity do is open up people to actually consider their lives, consider the stories they've maybe lived for or been bound to. When I think about Adam and Eve in the garden, you know, this is a story. The mistake wasn't the problem. You know, they believed a lie, a deception. And God was not surprised by that. You know, I mean, he's created these humans. They have his image, Imago Dei. They're not him. They don't have his creative ability, but they have a creative capacity to reign and rule with him in the earth. They have a decision-making capacity. That's apparent, right? Because they not only entertained the lie, but they decided to align with it.
Yeah.
That was not the issue. The issue was the hiding. The father came into the garden and he said, "Where are you?" And the response was, "We're hiding." Well, his response to that, it was, "We're hiding because we're naked." And his response is, "Who told you you're naked?" Right?
Yeah.
Why are you living a lie? The whole thing is who told you this lie? And why would you believe that? Why would you think that would keep me from coming into the garden? Why would you think you need to hide that?
Thank you for listening to part one of our conversation today with Pastor Aaron Golden. We invite you to join us again next Sunday at noon on 1470 AM and 102.1 FM WBTX for part two of our conversation with Pastor Aaron Golden. Thank you for listening today. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg in partnership with Sunshine Ministries. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps us spread hope to even more listeners. Stay tuned for more uplifting stories in the next episode. Until then, keep the faith, share the love, and find joy in the hope that Jesus Christ brings.